And good afternoon. It is 12:02 here on WASR. A very nice day. Not quite as sunny as we'd like, but, you know, hey, I'll take it. It's Friday. It's a long weekend. Probably my favorite weekend of the year because of the kickoff summer, which is my favorite season. Well, being Friday, once again, we bring on our man with all the answers, the real-life equivalent to Phineas J. Whoopi, Senator Jeff Bradley. Senator, thank you for being with us today.
Yeah, hey, how are you?
Not bad. You know, it's, I don't think I've ever mentioned that name to anyone. Those of you who remember the Tennessee Tuxedo cartoons, that's where that came
from. I don't remember, so I don't know.
Oh, you don't, you didn't watch those, huh?
No.
Oh, they were great. All right, so anyway, the abbreviated edition today, you're headed to Concord for a vote. And I understood, I thought there was a vote yesterday, so there's more votes today?
So what happened yesterday is all the amendments to the budget were voted on. So what happens after that is then the legislative budget assistant, which is our, you know, financial gurus, sort of put everything together in terms of, you know, the overall bottom line of the budget, the cost and the numbers on each particular item, so that we have a very clear picture of, you know, what the total spend is in terms of, you know, state funds, federal funds, dedicated funds, and what, you know, if there's a surplus projected, what may go into the rainy day fund. So it's sort of the bottom line calculation. And they generally need about 24 hours after all the amendments have been voted on. So, you know, that's what we will vote on this afternoon. I am not a member of the Finance Committee, but one of our members has had to go to a graduation today. And so I'm filling in actually this afternoon. There may be some discussion, you know, about some of the issues in the budget. I suspect there will be, because it's always the final vote. You know, that's what's going to happen today.
Do you know which particular issues are maybe thorny still?
So there are some policy issues that, you know, have gone into the budget. The governor's voluntary paid family leave, the Senate inserted into the budget. So there may be some discussion about that. I mean, it's something I've supported in the past, and obviously continue to support it. You know, before we got on the air, you mentioned the late-term abortion issue, which we've decided to put in the budget. There may be some discussion on that. We'll see.
Well, I'm interested about that. First of all, the governor is relatively pro-choice, and if I understand correctly, does not have a line item veto. So if he was to veto that amendment, he'd have to veto the entire budget. Is that correct?
Well, yes. If there was any particular item, it doesn't matter what it was. Like, for instance, the governor has said he would not support a budget that does not balance. Then he would have to veto it, the entire thing, because it doesn't have a line item veto. But the governor's also said that, like me, I'm pro-choice too, but New Hampshire has no regulations about late-term abortion right up until, you know, the moment of birth, really. And I think it's appropriate that we have some, you know, cutoff limit at roughly at viability, which is what 24 weeks is. We're one of only a handful of states with no limits. The vast majority of have, you know, some limitation on late-term abortion. And I think that, you know, most people in New Hampshire support that.
Okay. That is, now that was tucked in as part of the budget. How does that... That much I understand. but it's a relatively controversial bill.
Well, I'm not sure it's as controversial as, at least with the public. I think there's some significant support for, restricting late-term abortions. Now, for people that don't want any restriction on late-term abortion, of course, it's controversial. But, I think that the majority of people in New Hampshire think there ought to be some limitation. And, again, I'm saying this is somebody who is pro-choice, but I think I've always said I don't favor late-term abortions.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you
for
that.
But I would also add,
yes,
there is a medical emergency exception. So obviously, if a mother's health is threatened or life is threatened, there's an exception for that, as well there should be.
Okay. That's important to know, because I was going to ask about that. So what would happen if the budget got vetoed for whatever particular reason? Is there a default budget, or are we looking at a, like what happens at the federal level, where we have a partial shutdown?
So 2 years ago, Governor Sununu was governor, and it was Democrat majority in both the House and the Senate. And the budget that the House and Senate passed, had mandatory paid family leave, which had an income tax in it, and had, significant and unaffordable new spending and other things. Governor Sununu vetoed it, okay? So that veto happened at the end of June, but we passed a continuing resolution that allowed the state to function at the level of spending that had been authorized in, it would have been fiscal 2020. So, or fiscal 2019, I guess. So in any case, continuity of government, there was no government shutdown, and any new initiatives had to wait until a budget passed. And finally, the two sides came together, and some of the things that, were problematic, like the income tax, came out. We compromised on business taxes and put a trigger in, and on the trigger meaning they would not go forward if revenue fell below a certain threshold. And then the pandemic hit, and we almost met that threshold, but not quite. But that was, that was how we built a compromise then. And we did the same thing, when Governor Hassan was governor, and it was some of the same issues that led her to veto the budget, and we went with a continuing resolution. I don't think that'll happen this time. I mean, there are some disagreements, obviously, but I think we'll resolve them before all said and done.
Okay. Thank you for that explanation. 1211 here on WASR. I'm Eric Scott, and Jeb Bradley, New Hampshire Senator, is our guest. As we are talking about different things going on with the voting today, including last week, I believe, we talked about the Restaurant Act, which would have temporarily changed the percentage that the restaurant owner keeps from 3% to 5%. And then that passed the Senate, 22-2, by the way, according to the press release. But then it got voted down as an amendment, and I'm a little confused by that. If it already passed the Senate, doesn't it then automatically either go to the House or to the governor for a signature?
Well, we had tabled it, and we had tabled it to consider whether it should go into the budget. There's a cost to it. I think that we're getting back to normal, which is a good thing. I hope that, the last vestiges of the state of emergency are lifted, fairly soon. Restaurants are more able to resume, normal operations. So I think when it was introduced as an amendment to the budget, even though we had voted for it you know, in probably February or March, things look a little different today. And, you know, it would have obviously undermined. And here's what we are doing with the rooms and meals tax. We are sending a significant amount of new money back to cities and towns under the revenue sharing formula of the meals and rooms tax. And that money going back to cities and towns will be available for property tax relief. So it would have cut into that. And, you know, the finance committee decided that it was better to send more money back for property tax relief.
Okay. The other one was, let's see, the Affordable Housing Fund, which is Senate Bill 127, voted unanimously ought to pass, but then got tabled. So I guess the next question is, where is this money, or for what is this money supposed to go to? Is this to keep people in their homes for renters, or is it just for property owners as well?
No, it's a fund. It's a fund that helps build workforce housing. So there's been a project in Wolfboro, Harriman Hill, that was built utilizing sort of lower cost capital to aid developers to be able to more affordably build the kind of housing that we need for workforce housing. And it's been very successful. There are a couple of projects in Conway that have gone forward. It's worked around the state. And with the federal funding that has come to New Hampshire, we've actually put $25 million into the budget for the Affordable Housing Fund. So it's, I think, a very significant amount of money to help, you know, one of the biggest issues in terms of attracting a workforce in New Hampshire is affordable housing. And, you know, we need to, you know, have that lower cost capital for developers to do it. That's not the only issue. You know, certainly planning and zoning issues on a town-by-town basis are important. For instance, the town of Conway, which really needs, you know, in their tourist business, they need people to work in restaurants at Cranmore, in retail establishments. And so affordable housing is a huge issue in Conway. And they've passed a higher density zoning format in Conway that will allow them to develop it, and probably, you know, they'll be a prime candidate for some of this new funding.
I really don't understand why some people really get anti affordable housing. It you know, as far as I'm concerned, everybody wins, but be that as it may.
Nobody wants anything in their backyard today. And you know, it just, and I get that. I totally get that. But at the same time, you know, in a modern, diverse country that we have, or state that we have, there's, you know, you've got to have an infrastructure in place, whether it's roads or bridges or broadband or energy pipelines or transmission lines, affordable housing. You know, it's just vital. And so you have to balance, you know, protecting the environment and balancing a neighborhood and things like that. And there have to be regulations to do that. And I think you can do that, as Conway, I think, has proven with their new zoning ordinance. But that's been some of the, you know, reaction, unfortunately, to the housing situation. It makes it hard to, you know, construct the kind of housing that we need for workforce issues and people.
Any idea on how long that bill will stay on the table? Or is there any way to
know? The bill's going to stay on the table, okay? But what we did, Eric, is we took the provision of that bill and put it in the budget. So the Affordable Housing Fund, by virtue of the language that was in that bill, assuming the budget passes, is going to get that influx of funding. So that's a good thing. But the bill will stay on the table,
okay.
The actual bill. And I was the sponsor of that because, you know, I think this is one of the biggest issues facing New Hampshire is that we need a place for people, especially younger people, you know, just starting out to be able to live and to work here.
Okay. Do you expect the governor to sign the budget bill?
Yeah, I do. I think that, I think when all's said and done, you know, all the people that have worked on the budget, the House and the Senate, the governor's office, will come together on a really good package. And as I've, you know, said all along, a budget needs to do three things. We've kind of touched on the first thing is meeting the needs of people in the state, so affordable housing. But there's a lot of new money that's going for mental health, for substance abuse, you know, things like that that are, you know, vitally important. We also have to make sure that we protect the taxpayers and spending at a level that is affordable, not only today, but in the future. And so much of this federal money that we're getting from Washington is going to be used for one-time infrastructure projects. So that's where the money for the affordable housing is coming from, the new money. For instance, there's going to be upgrades to our state parks and water system upgrades and things like that. So capital expenditures as opposed to, you know, growing government programs. So I think we protect taxpayers in that way, too. And then a budget, the third thing a budget has to do, because it's sort of the blueprint of, you know, how you interact with the business community in the state, your level of taxation and that kind of thing, we're continuing our trend to make New Hampshire more competitive and more attractive, you know, to locate a business in through lower business taxes. That's something that's been very successful. I mean, had it not been for the pandemic, you know, our revenue would have continued to grow. Last year, we lost revenue because of the pandemic, but we've more than made that up. This year, as we've come, you know, through the pandemic and now on the back end of it, and I think it's because New Hampshire's economy is perceived as being good and a place to be and a place to invest in. So that's the third important thing of the budget. So I think, you know, we touch all of those bases.
Okay. 12:20 here in WASR, a slightly abbreviated edition because Senator Bradley will be at the House chamber in Concord, correct? That's where your vote will be?
Yep.
Okay. Let me ask a couple of questions I always wondered about. First of all, can you introduce a bill in the House and the Senate simultaneously?
Yeah, that happens not all the time, but sometimes same bill will get introduced in both chambers. I mean, obviously, you know, to introduce a bill in the Senate, it has to be a senator who is what's known as the prime sponsor. To introduce a bill in the House, it has to be a House member. Now, House members will co-sponsor Senate bills, and likewise, senators can co-sponsor House bills, but the same bill, it's not often, but it does happen.
Okay. Who sets the agenda for committees and for the full session?
So the Speaker of the House and the Senate President assign the bills to a committee, and that sort of starts the agenda. Then the committees have, you know, ownership, if you will, of the bills, and committees have to have a hearing on a bill. You can't just bottle a bill up and not have a hearing. Everything gets a hearing. And then committees in their structure in either the House or Senate have to take action on a bill. And in the first year of a session, you know, you have three options. You can vote to pass a bill, you can vote to kill a bill, or you can vote to retain a bill for further study. And then when you do that last option, retaining a bill, it has to come out and be voted on in January. So sometimes, you know, some of the more complicated legislation that needs, you know, just more time to do the homework on, and there were a lot of bills like that this year that got retained, that's an option in the first year. In the second year, your motions are, you can pass a bill, you can kill a bill, or you can do what's called interim study, which means it's basically a polite way of killing a bill. It's just not going to go forward in that second year of the session. And when the House or the Senate are on the, if a bill is on the floor of either the House or Senate, you can table a bill too. And that generally, sometimes a bill is tabled because, again, you want to do more work on it. Sometimes it's tabled because it's going to go into the budget. Sometimes it's tabled because, again, like interim study, it's a nicer way of, you know, killing the bill.
1223 here in WASR. Senator Jeb Bradley is our guest because it's Friday. Slightly abbreviated edition is there'll be a vote, so we'll have him until about 12:30. Senator, has the capital gains tax at the state level been addressed?
Thankfully, there are no proposals that I'm aware of, at least this year, that have gotten very far, at least, to implement a capital gains tax in New Hampshire. If you recall, 2 years ago, you know, when our Democratic friends were in the majority, they did introduce, and I think the House actually passed a capital gains tax. So, thankfully, no income tax, no capital gains, and no sales tax. And in our version of the budget, we're actually lowering, you know, business taxes again, as we've done, you know, responsibly for the last several years.
Okay. One thing I've always wanted to know, what exactly is executive session, and why would you do it?
So that's just a name for being in the voting mode in a committee. You know, you have a hearing on a bill, and generally speaking, if a bill has any controversy about it or if it needs any work, you don't take a vote right away. Sometimes you take a vote right away. Generally, if a bill has no controversy and is, you know, easy to move forward with, you would take a vote right away. But before you take a vote, you go into what's known as executive session. And it's just, it basically means you're in the voting mode.
Okay. Question for you. I just got a message from a gentleman who said that he said there was an 8% capital gains tax here in New Hampshire. I'm a little confused by that.
No. I think somebody misunderstood me. There's no 8% capital gains tax in New Hampshire.
Okay. Well, we'll love
there was a proposal for a capital gains tax 2 years ago that okay. I believe passed the House, but it died in the Senate.
Oh, okay. I don't know if you can speak to this, because I know you don't have your notes in front of you, and I know we've got just a couple of minutes. Senate Bill 3, which would exempt the PPP grants from the business profits tax, that's estimate was $99 million. Do you know if that's going to be in the budget?
Yeah, we've accounted for it in the budget. The House has passed it finally. You know, look, this was my bill. When the CARES Act passed in March of 2020, it created this fund called the Payroll Protection Plan that helped businesses with 500 or fewer employees stay afloat, meet payroll, and not go bankrupt or out of business. It was very successful in keeping the economy in New Hampshire afloat during that very troubling time. It was never intended by the federal government that it would be a taxable event per the IRS. We had not updated our tax code to the current IRS regulations, and so that provision did not exist in New Hampshire that it would be tax exempt as the feds did. So suddenly, businesses that, you know, had struggled and were kept afloat by this, were all of a sudden, you know, getting a tax bill, even though it was never intended by the feds. So I filed this legislation because I thought, you know, look, Main Street businesses, or even some of the, you know, up to 500 employee businesses were struggling, and, you know, it shouldn't be a taxable event. So it was never anticipated to be a revenue gain. I think that the, you know, from people I've talked to, the $99 million is probably a lot larger than it is. Any impact of not receiving, you know, those dollars will be spread out over a couple of years. But again, we're almost $200 million ahead in revenue this year, and the economy is strong. So let's not, you know, use the pandemic as a taxable event.
Okay. All right. I understand that you're short on time, so I will call it a day here, Senator. I do hope you manage to enjoy the rest of your day and enjoy the long weekend.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
Thank you.
All right. It is 12:30 on WASR. Enjoy the relatively nice weather. We've got some rain coming in. It'll probably be later on tonight.